Welcome to the Pakistan Development Podcast. I'm Muneeb Ansari.
And I'm Rabia Malik.
You can listen to all of our episodes and comment on them at pakistandevelopmentpodcast.wordpress.com. In this episode, we speak to Umair Javed about local governments in Pakistan. Umair is a PhD candidate in political sociology at the London School of Economics and Political Science, interested in the political economy of governance in Pakistan and other democratizing countries. He is also currently a visiting faculty member at LUMS and an affiliate at the Consortium for Development Policy Research in Lahore. We talk about why local elected governments are important for development and democracy, and how in Pakistan, local governments have actually been used to neutralize representative institutions, and why today political parties seem skeptical of devolving power to them. We speak about the progress made with the recently held nationwide local government elections, a first under civilian governments, and how these newly elected bodies differ across the four provinces. Thank you, Umair, so much for talking to us. Let's get started with just the very basic question of why are local governments important for political development, for democracy?
There are normally two arguments that are given in favor of local governments. One is what the World Bank and generally sort of donor agencies talk about, which is their effectiveness in inducing local socioeconomic development outcomes. So that's one particular aspect of local governments that we normally hear a lot about, that when you devolve responsibility and when you devolve implementation, as well as sort of some level of fiscal capacity, you see better results in terms of like programmatic interventions within health, education, and so on and so forth. So that's one argument that we normally see. But then there is sort of the other argument, which is what sort of you're also talking about, which is their relationship with overall political evolution or political development. And I think especially for democracies which are transitioning, or which are what you would normally classify as transitioning regimes, local governments play a very important role in increasing citizen trust of democratic institutions. I think democracy is not just sort of the act of holding elections. Obviously, if you look at a more expanded definition beyond just what the procedural obligation is, you will also see that it requires people posing trust in particular institutional configurations, and then also relying on those institutional configurations to resolve their day-to-day needs. And local governments provide exactly that, especially in countries that have large populations. So if you take the example of Pakistan, the average National Assembly constituency holds anywhere from between 300 to 400,000 voters, right? So that means approximately about a million people overall. A provincial assembly seat is about roughly half of that. These are very large electoral spaces, right? And obviously there is very little interaction between people who've been elected to make laws or to implement laws with the people who are actually electing them. When you introduce a local government system, that just brings people into greater contact with their representatives. And I think for a democratic system to function in the long run, the trust deficit that you normally see, especially in transitioning regimes, that needs to end. And that trust deficit can only end with prolonged interaction with representatives. On the flip side, what it does, is that it also increases accountability pressures on political actors. So political actors can't get away with, when they know that they have to face an electorate where their seat is essentially decided by about 5,000 voters, they know that they can't get away with not doing anything for a particular, you know, 5-year term. They need to sort of act in a much more coherent and also in a much more efficient manner to ensure that their chances of re-election remain secure. I think that's a pressure that not a lot of people who are elected at the National Assembly or Provincial Assembly level normally have to face. So I think in that sense, it's very, I think for increasing accountability and also increasing interaction and hence trust between state society, I think local governments are very important. The third and final reason for why they would be important is the role that they play in institutionalizing political parties at the local level. I think if we've all sort of come to this consensus, and I think this goes for academic literature as well as practitioners, that there is no democracy possible without some sort of organized platforms of representation, which are normally political parties, then I think strengthening political parties is a way of strengthening accountability and the representative quality of a particular democracy. So I think that is something that is directly also related to local government elections. And I think it would give political parties an incentive to invest in grassroots mobilization a lot more. And that, I think, is beneficial for the sustainability of a democratic project, especially in countries where there is a Praetorian threat of some kind or the other that we see, especially in a place like Pakistan, for example.
Right. You mentioned the Praetorian threat. So Pakistan has this very particular history of local governments where generally military governments have held local government elections, and then when you have a civilian government, they've rolled it back. Can you speak to that a bit? Or why has that happened?
So Pakistani dictatorships have, they've been usually emerged through, not through a constitutional crisis of sorts, but they're usually non-violent in the fact that they come to power without sort of a lot of bloodshed being caused. I wouldn't say that they're completely non-violent in the regimes that they're there. Has been violence that military dictatorships have carried out. But by and large, the product of the particular dictator, the configuration of that particular dictatorship relies on some sort of contract between political elites and the military government. And that sustains it for an extended period of time. Now, the basic contradiction in Pakistan's history, if you look at 70 years of institutional and political history, well, one is civil military, but the other is also between the provinces and the center. And this is a function of how partition actually took place and how the arena of politics or representative politics was actually the province in colonial India. So what we see is that political parties are mostly strengthened around provincial units. There are very few political parties that can claim to have national character. The People's Party at some point in its history, and even at its peak during the 70s, it was strong in two provinces and very weak in two others. So given that particular relationship, for the military to maintain power, and for it to maintain sort of the autonomy of a particular regime, it has to eliminate the provincial tier, or it has to water down the provincial tier of government. It's very easy to capture a particular city and say that you control central power. But then to exercise that power effectively, you also need to gain some sort of consent from below. And that consent, if politics is conducted at the provincial tier, is harder because that's where most of the opposition then gets clustered around. So local governments are a way of basically eliminating a particular tier of politicians where the military feels that it might actually face some sort of opposition. If you look at the most recent example of military rule in Pakistan, which was the Musharraf regime, the regime took over in 1999. It maintained a technocratic setup by banning political parties and political activity for about 2 years. During that two-year process, it created what it called the National Reconstruction Bureau. And that was basically responsible for creating a new tier of government, which was the Union Council and sort of the local district governments. Those district governments had elections before national elections were held in place, right? So it was actually the military regime engineering some sort of social support that came from the grassroots level so that it could sort of maintain control over a longer
time. How big would a union council be?
So union council, back in 2001 when the first elections were held, since the 80s, there was a considerable gap in between. The union council was mostly between 25 to 30,000 people. So the actual electorate was about 12,500. Now, obviously, the union councils have expanded in size as Pakistan's population has grown. But at that particular time, it was easier to sort of engage with sort of district governments to give, you know, some devolve some authority from the provinces to the district governments, so that political parties then suddenly become fractured and they don't have an arena where they can sort of dominate. And I think that is one of the advantages that local governments have normally held for military regimes. Even if you go back in history, if you look at the Zia regime, if you look at the Ayyub regime, the Zia held his local government elections within 2 years of coming to power. His exercise was in 1979. So even that was largely done to ensure that the principal opposition party at the time, which was the People's Party, remained outside of any formal system of power. And so he banned the party, held local government elections, and he created a new class of
politicians. These were non-party elections.
Whenever the military has carried out local government elections in Pakistan, they've always been non-party. And they've largely been to consolidate its support at the local level. If you go further back to Ayyub's martial law, I think his basic democracy's order, which were to form the electoral college for the president, was exactly like that. It was to create that sort of consent that is required for a regime to maintain its power in relative peace for an extended period of time.
How has this affected political party development and how they view local governments today?
So one reason, and I think a lot of people who criticize political parties for not having local government elections during what was classified as ostensibly civilian rule, they tend to sort of gloss over, or at least they ignore the fact that local governments have actively undermined political parties as well, because they've been held on non-party basis historically in Pakistan, discounting the most recent exercise. So when they were held on non-party basis, what it does is that it concentrates political and social capital within an individual rather than the individual's identity of being a member of a particular party or being part of a larger representative organizational platform. Now, that is partially why political parties end up, why there is this mistrust between devolving power further, where they're not sure, because of the fact that political parties don't have a lot of presence at the grassroots level, they're not sure who exactly is going to win in a election that is carried out in a free and fair manner. So there is a greater, you know, so if you look at the tussle that happens, it's that, you know, people, political parties prefer to give more power to the provinces, take away power from the center, and then concentrate power at the provincial tier, because that's where they're strongest. And so I think several sort of, you know, iterations of non-party local government elections have basically created the sense where political party elites, or at least leaders, people who sort of decide, you know, issues in political parties, they've basically ignored the local government here because they know that that's not like a sure, safe, you know, arena for them to contest elections.
So recently that seems to be changing, because now for the first time, I think, we've had local government elections under a civilian government for the first time in 10 years.
It's the first time that we've had local government elections in 10 years. It's not the first time that we've had local government elections under a civilian rule. There have been previous instances, but those instances were either very short-lived experiments, like councils were created and they lasted for like a year and a half, or they were mostly in urban areas. In fact, Lahore had local government elections in 97, but again, those were elections for Lahore Municipal Corporation, which is just sort of the urban part of the city, part of the district. So this is the first time that this has happened. This is also the first time they've held them on party basis. But to a large extent, that credit actually needs to go to the Supreme Court for ensuring that the laws that they've passed have included, you know, party-based representation as a clause. Most of the initial iterations of the laws that were created were all for non-party polls. No political party in Pakistan, barring perhaps the Pakistan Tehreek Insaf, wanted to have party polls at the local level, even in this particular iteration. But the court intervened and made sure that the laws were revised.
Right, and these laws are at the provincial level, right? Provincial government.
So each provincial government has a mandate to pass the law. It's now a constitutional obligation to devolve power. It's there in Article 140 of the Constitution. It was something that was inserted through the 18th Amendment under the Charter of Democracy. So if you look at the academic literature on democratization, one of the most fundamental independent variables that's normally cited for democratization is elite consensus or elite pacts, right? So when political parties or leaderships of political parties agree on procedural democracy as the way of sharing power or of power transitions. And the Charter of Democracy in Pakistan sort of occupies something like that. It occupies like a consensus between the two major parties at that time. And I think part of the understanding at that time was that, yes, we need to devolve power further because it's becoming, it's simply untenable for us to not have representation at the local level. And they also have begun to come around to the idea of having local governments as a way of institutionalizing support for democracy. Like I mentioned earlier that, you know, if they have representation at the local level, if they are people who identify with a particular party, there are greater chances that they'll be able to mobilize more effectively if there was a threat to the entire system as a whole. So I think the parties were forced in that direction by the Supreme Court, and I think they've made peace with it to a certain extent.
Yes. So just for context, can we actually describe what we mean by local governments? Like,
okay,
who is elected, and like how many people at the Union Council and ward?
Yeah. So in KP we have village councils, which basically represent one particular settlement, which is a revenue village. Then you have neighborhood councils in urban areas. So those are sort of the building blocks of a particular local government. Then you have higher tiers of local government, right? You have a tehsil, which is a sub-district, administrative unit, and then you have the district. And, you know, people The local government exercise in KP was very extensive. People had to cast something like 8 votes. So they had to elect a village council member or a neighborhood council member. They had to elect a minority member, a women's representation member, a youth member, and a general councillor who would then be part of the tehsil council or the district council and so on. In Punjab, it's straightforward. They've created a bifurcation between rural and urban areas. So in rural areas, you have union councils. Each union council is divided into 6 wards. And each ward is a single member constituency, over one particular geographic area. There are, any number of union councils in a particular district council, and that district council is then responsible for electing a chairman who will then be responsible for all the rural areas of a particular district. In the urban areas, you have either a municipal committee, which is a city that is above 50,000 in terms of its population and below 500,000. So anywhere between 50 to 500,000, and you have a municipal committee, and there the basic electoral unit is a ward, and you elect one person who will be the ward member from that particular constituency, and the council of all winners of ward elections will then elect what would be the mayor of that municipal committee. At the second tier, the tier above that, you have municipal corporations in urban areas, which are cities that are larger than 500,000 people. They have union councils with multi-member union councils with single member wards, and at the end of the day, they're supposed to elect a mayor after they've elected chairman of all the union councils. The chairmen then form the electoral college for the mayor, and this pattern is replicated in Sindh as well, by and large.
But there's still issues, though, with how much power these councils will have at the local level. And I mean, are they just window dressing, or will they actually have executive power?
So it varies from province to province, because the legal structures are different. So in Balochistan, the laws are fairly, the powers devolved are fairly, they've been diluted by a number of provisions. I can speak much more comprehensively about the laws in Punjab and Sindh, and in KP for that matter. The KP law is authoritative. It is also much more progressive in terms of devolving power. It doesn't have party representation at the village council level, but there is party representation at every other level. They're also serious about devolving funds through what is now called a provincial finance commission. So through that, districts will get development funds, and that particular chunk of money is close to about 20% of the overall development budget of the province. So that's not an insignificant amount. In Punjab, the party in power, the PMLN, prefers bureaucratic state structures to undertake development projects or to undertake implementation of governance in general. That stands in contradiction to the ethics of local government, right? So the law that we see in Punjab is basically window dressing. It hasn't devolved fiscal capacity to the provinces to the districts. So local government don't really have much space to raise their own taxes. They have one instrument at their disposal, which is effective, which is the property tax. But even that is collected by the provincial government and then distributed based on a formula that the provincial government agrees upon. The other major issue is that bureaucrats, the chief administrator of a particular district, which is the deputy commissioner, is still under the control of the provincial government, not under the control of the elected council.
These are civil servants.
These are centrally recruited, mostly centrally recruited or provincially recruited civil servants. And they report directly to the provincial government or the provincial bureaucracy. So there are issues with how that law sort of, bifurcates this power between a bureaucratic state structure and something that's much more democratic or representative in nature. In Sindh, we see pretty much the same pattern. I think that also reflects the contradiction between a party ruling large chunks of the province and then one particular party being powerful in the larger city. So because there's a fight over resources and there's a fight over that particular city, as long as the provincial government dilutes the local government provision, it can extract more from that particular city and by way of resources. If there's an actual progressive local government law, then the city would be responsible for raising its own revenue and then also reinvesting it in the city. And that, I think, is something that's not acceptable to the political leadership as of this particular point. So I think yeah, I mean, it's a great first step, having party-based polls, generally getting people excited about local government. But I think substantively there needs to be a constituency of individuals, and it will have to come from the political opposition, that argue for more for more powers, for greater autonomy at the local level. And I think the debate there is not between, it's obviously partially between province and district, but it's also between elective versus bureaucratic structures. And I think that's a debate that may be settled in the long run, but it would require a concerted push from certain quarters for something like that to happen.
So in this cycle, I mean, the things we talked about earlier, that what local governments can do, mobilize, institutionalize political parties, in this campaign, I mean, it's very new, it's the first time, as we talked about, do you see indications of this happening, or what sort of candidates are running or are being elected?
So I think going generally by sort of Pakistan's political economy or the way that society is structured, local governments are prone to elite capture. That's something that I think has happened historically in the country, and it's going to happen again. The reason is that other constituencies or other social groups are demobilized. Voters generally gravitate towards influential candidates or local influentials who then internalize the cost of an election and undertake the entire campaign on their own, and they're able to sort of guarantee patronage by, you know, forging a connection with the state. So the same pattern has been replicated as far as the local government elections are concerned. What is interesting, and this is a contrast between Punjab and Sindh, and also Punjab and KP, is that in Sindh and KP, parties have institutionalized themselves at whatever tier you had party-based election. So the People's Party in Sindh did very well. It swept upwards of 70% of all seats. The MQM similarly did very well in urban areas in Sindh and in Karachi and Hyderabad. In Punjab, on the other hand, what you had was a large chunk of independent candidates winning, right? And this was because the ruling party was either A, unsure of who to give a ticket to for elections, so they left the field open, or B, they couldn't give, they had a limited number of tickets and they couldn't appease all of their supporters or all people who had aspirations of joining the party. So in a lot of instances, powerful independent candidates have won against candidates who held tickets from the ruling party, which is the PMLN. So I think there, the pattern generally is that you have lots of sort of strong independent landlords, businessmen, mostly these two categories, depending on whether you're in an urban area or rural area. And they've done well enough to sort of, you know, make some space for themselves in this local government structure. There is very little political opposition in Punjab. I think the opposition party, main opposition party, PTI, has managed to get somewhere like 11.7% of all seats, which is quite low considering that, the party did, or at least showed signs of putting up a better fight early on in the campaign.
Could that be a function that at the provincial level and the federal level, that party is in power? Yeah. So why would people vote for a party which is in the opposition?
I think incumbency matters a lot in any midterm election. And this was exactly on the midterms. It was like literally halfway between the in the current term for the provincial and the federal government. So I think it partially does because people use bargain off their votes for patronage, or they bargain off their votes for delivery of some kind, right? So it only makes sense for you to invest your vote in a candidate that can secure direct access. And the general interpretation is that a provincial party candidate or a party who's in power in the province, that's at power in the provincial level, has a better chance of winning at the local level. So you have like a sort of a mass of voters who just go with that safe option. But it's also a function of opposition parties not doing as well in terms of organizing and mobilizing the electorate. I think those things they might not have ensured wins for them in multiple districts, but they might have sort of increased their seat tally to make them more competitive. I think that's also something that the parties need to look at.
So looking towards the future, how do you see local governments evolving in Pakistan? Do you think that this system might stay, or will it be changed again as it has in the past?
I think the courts might ensure that it stays. So despite whatever a particular political elite wants or doesn't want is somewhat irrelevant to it. I think the courts will make sure that these exercises are conducted out on a fairly regular basis. Not saying that there won't be gaps, but the fact that the court will make sure that, you know, the gaps aren't too long. The other thing I think is that progress or evolution towards something that's more substantive will only come when there's a constituency for making it more substantive. And I think that constituency will always be opposition parties. I think it largely depends on, so progress will depend on, so actually, you know, just to sort of go back, if you have a diluted law and that diluted law doesn't give power to the district government, and you have the same party being sort of present at the district government and the provincial, it's not that big an issue, right? I mean, there might be some internal conflict within a party. You know, people who've been elected at the district level might sort of lobby the provincial government for passing on more power. But that'll mostly happen informally. In terms of formal opposition, the biggest constituency for devolution would be an opposition party that manages to win in some areas and then decides that, you know, it needs more power to sustain its sort of winning streak in those particular areas. And that is where it'll have to take on, you know, a party that's in power in the provincial government for it to change that law, right? So I think we'll see this happening in Sindh a lot sooner than it happens in Punjab, because the MQM is dominant in Karachi, and any political compact or contract that is signed between the two parties in Sindh is dependent on the MQM getting fair share of power for the city that it represents. And I think you might even see some changes, you know, taking place to the law in the long run. In Punjab, I don't see that happening because A, the provincial government has largely taken away powers from district governments and given them to companies that it has formed for the purpose of municipal administration. And those companies have nothing to do with the elected tiers of government that currently exist, right? So all development expenditure, all municipal administrative governance activities being carried out by these companies that report directly to the chief minister's office, right?
So these are manned by civil servants.
So these are partially manned by civil servants. Partially, the idea of creating companies was to recruit people from the private sector, right? So some of them are led by people who were working at multinationals or previously. They have nothing to do with the people who've been elected right now. And I think that's where democratic deficit exists in Punjab specifically. And I think it'll be much harder to make the system more representative, more substantive, given the current institutional arrangement that we see in the province.
All right. Thank you so much, Thank you for having me. This was very interesting.
Yeah.
A reminder, you can comment on this post at pakistandevelopmentpodcast.wordpress.com. We'd love to hear your feedback and begin a discussion. We're also now on Twitter at @pakdevpodcast. Once again, thank you for listening.